Velkommen til Paradigmepodden, hvor vi møter spennende mennesker som opptatt av nye paradigmer på mange ulike områder. Mitt navn Terje Toftnes. I forrige episode, nummer 74, møtte vi også Dr. Thomas Rau, som har utviklet The Swiss Biological Medicine Concept, og som vel den i Europa som kan mest om komplementær behandling av kreftsykdom. Det også en av grunnene til at ventelistene hans lange, med mennesker fra hele verden som kommer til ham når de oppgitt av sykehusene eller ønsker en mer skånsom behandling som også virker, fordi han behandler også årsakene til kreften. Da Dr. Rau var i Norge i 2023, gjorde jeg sammen med Julia Benito i Hemali et nytt intervju med ham. Det ligger også på Hemalis nettsider, altså hemali.no, men jeg vil også gjerne presentere det i denne podcasten, selv om man repeterer en del av de samme poengene fra forrige episode, men også utdyper andre ting. Jeg mener budskapet hans så utrolig viktig å få frem til flest mulig som berørt eller opptatt av kreft. Og jeg vet at det dessverre mange når hver tredje person i Norge nå får kreft før fylte 75 år ifølge kreftregistret. Over 35 000 nye tilfeller hvert år her i landet. Og derfor kalles også kreft for vår største folkesykdom. Og helsebudsjettene sprenges, mye på grunn av den ekstremt kostbare kreftbehandlingen. Så vi slipper til Dr. Thomas Rau, som forteller hva de gjør og hva han mener om hele situasjonen.
And what we do is we look for the causes for cancer, the causes for neurological disease, for example toxic load or wrong metabolism or intestinal problems or just wreck situation of metabolic functions. It changed dramatically within the last several years to all kind of cancers, and the development of these cancers is much more rapid. So we have different causes. They are more acute, they are more severe, and we had a change over the last few years. We have more difficult cancer like pancreas cancer, glioblastoma, brain cancer, or metastasized lung cancer, and so on.
And your patients are younger?
The patients, yeah. The cases get worse, and the patients get, in average, younger.
How do you explain that?
This comes from the environment and the nutritional toxicity. I think the nutrition dramatically got worse within the last not only some years, but last 20 years, and the environmental load with all these toxins like glyphosate, like pyrethroids, DDT, and all these kind of agricultural toxins got much, much worse, and they are, all of them are very cancerogenic. The nutrition changed dramatically.
So what you're saying is that we now see the result of years of bad nutrition.
Genau, exactly. Yeah.
And what about the link between your intestines and cancer?
The bacteria in our gut, we have more bacteria in our gut than we have the whole body cells. So they detoxify, they work like a blossom paper in your gut, and they would be adapted ideally to your metabolism, to your body over millions of years. But now they are changed because of the antibiotics, because of the difference how food is produced and so on. This is one thing. And the second thing that's very important, 90% in adults, T lymph cells, you know, the immune soldiers, so to say, in the body, the immune situation as a system is in the small intestine. It's about the small intestine, which is really wrecked in average of our patients.
So in order to cure cancer and a lot of other diseases, we need to look at the intestines and we need to treat.
In my courses, I bang to the table and say to my students, cancer is an intestinal disease. Why? Is he crazy? Cancer is an intestinal disease? Yes, because the immune system, which is always wrecked in our cancer patients, measurably, it's in the intestines. The small intestines are the carrier of the immune system, and the immune system in all our cancer patients is really decreased. It's very weak. And when we do a upbuild in our intestinal situation, we can measure the increase of the T lymph cells on the NK cells, the natural killer cells. We test all these in our patients and we can measure the increase of immune system, and the intensity of the cancer development reduces. It has really a relation to the nutrition and how we build up the intestinal flora.
But if I see an oncologist in Norway, he or she would never tell me this. Why?
Because they follow the guidelines of treatment. And the guidelines of treatment which they have to follow, otherwise they get endangered. This is a political situation, unfortunately. It's not only in Norway, it's in the US, it's the same. In Germany it's very bad. So they are not even allowed to do other things, alternative things. They are not allowed. And the so-called scientific processes are just based on the anti-cancer treatment with chemo and radiation and operation. They follow the guidelines and they have to follow. This is the very sad part.
But even the knowledge now that we have about the intestines, it's not very radical anymore. But still, this is something that is not implemented in the treatment of cancer. Why is that? Why is it not becoming at least part of the so-called guidelines?
I don't know. I think there are multi-billion interests behind, which influence even the universities that to maintain the population sick. Well, I know this is very conspirative. It sounds extremely conspirative. But when I see my patients, I ask them, have you been discussing other kind of approaches for cancer with your oncologist? No. Have you ever been tested for intestinal problems or intestinal situation? No. Well, but we test all of our patients, not only the cancer, we test all the patients with the intestinal comprehensive stool analysis, and every cancer patient has a decrease of intestinal bacteria, significant decrease of intestinal bacteria, but not only 5%, no, to 1%, to 5% of what it should be. So this intestinal situation is just so much weakened that the immune system, which would work in the body itself against cancer cells, because immunitarily they are recognized by good NK cells, but they are no more around. My cancer patients, they come across with a average of 5 to perhaps 8% of the NK cells when we measure what they would need according age and normal values. It's absolutely horrible. So if somebody says the intestinal situation, nutrition has nothing to do with cancer development, but even with cancer, how it behaves when you have cancer, if they say there is no relation, well, they just show ignorance. Ignorance is very widespread in Orthodox medicine. I'm super sorry about it. Our impression is, and we have, well, my big strength is that we have many, many, many cancer patients. We really have hundreds, and in the past I had thousands of cancer patients. So I see a lot of patients who were more damaged by chemotherapy than they were really killed by cancer. I know the numbers are, well, it's known that chemotherapy can damage the patient itself, himself or herself. But how much number there is, it's not really out in public.
So how big percentage of those who so-called die from cancer actually die from the treatment?
I'm not a statistical guy, I'm not a scientific person, I'm just a practitioner. But my big strength is that I have a huge experience in treating cancer biologically. In my patients, unfortunately, I see a lot of damage by chemotherapy. And that's why we try to change the whole thing. I'm not fully against chemotherapy because the patient comes and the patient already has stage 4 cancer. We don't have the time to change his metabolism, and so you eat differently now, but the cancer develops. So we have to do both things together.
How do you do that? Tell me, like, practically how it's done.
We work together with oncologists very well. We try to adapt the dosage, not according to the guidelines, but according to the individual situation of the patient. We measure the patient if they can detoxify. There are genetic tests who show us if they can detoxify the chemotherapy or if they just accumulate. And the ones, it's 40% of the patients who have a detoxification deficiency. Orthodox oncology does not take any notice of this, but they can't detoxify and they get cumulative toxicity, and that's the ones who really get into damage. So we look how is the metabolization of the toxic treatment, and in the same time we do much metabolic treatment, and we change the diet of the patient, and we build up his immune system as much as possible. Meantime, why they have the treatment.
So let's say I came to you and I said to you that my doctor told me I have cancer, it is not curable, can you please help me? What would you have done?
I tell them, dear patient, I could show you at least 100 cases who were told you have a lifespan of 3-4 months more, and now 2 years later, 4 years later, they are still around, and they are around even better than before. Not all the patients. I would never say I heal a cancer patients, but I can make their lifespan longer and I can make their life quality much better. This I can say. And I can show many cases.
And you start with the intestines, is that correct?
We start day one with the immune system. We build up the T cell. Of course, day one we test everything. And then day one we begin with the treatment of the intestinal situation and of the immune system, which goes very much parallel. We begin to detoxify and we look how comes the patient across even before. Are there toxins like mercury, like cadmium, like perfluorooctanic acid, organic toxins? If they have this, all these cancerogenic toxins, then we have to detoxify, because otherwise they would still work permanently. I think the high rate of reoccurrences in Orthodox medicine comes because the causes for cancer are not researched and not found and not treated. I invite everyone, every researcher, every doctor who doesn't believe what we do, just come to my clinic and look the cases. We have, when I left the big clinic to make a even more specified clinic, we had 86,000 patient numbers, and we can show the cases. I'm a practitioner, I'm not a scientific person. But I have, probably nobody else in Europe has more practice in biological treatment of cancer. these other patients, for example, ulcerative colitis or multiple sclerosis or irritable bowel syndrome or borreliosis, Lyme disease. Easy. Lyme disease is so easy to treat with biological means, without antibiotics. And so many diseases we have, which are just a crux, we call it crux, of the orthodox medicine, they don't know how to treat. And so these are the cases of patients whom we can treat.
How?
By detoxification, by looking the causes of the background causes of the diseases. But it's always the same, it's so simple. We have to look widely for toxic load, because toxic load nowadays is so giant in our population through nutrition, through environmental toxicity and so on. This is number one. Number two is wrong intestinal situation, and the intestines is the biggest organ and the fastest rebuilding organ, and the detox of the body comes by, well, is done in a healthy person by the intestinal bacteria. Our patients who come to us, they have what they should have, 5%, 1%, 10% of the intestinal bacteria, and they would detoxify the body. So this is no more done. Toxicity accumulates, the cells get weaker, the cells even get epigenetically changed to cancer, as an example, and they don't work anymore correctly. And there is the unconscious nerve system, the vagal nerve system, which is, we have more cells, nerve cells in the gut than we have in the brain. So we have our gut brain, and this begins to reclaim. And then they have all these pains, chronic pain problems, they have the cramps, they have the, well, all these unclear symptoms.
It sounds like these diseases have something in common when it comes to cause.
Exactly. The in common, of course, is toxic load, number one, and secondly, destroyed intestinal situation. These are the two main important things. Number three, my three pillars of treatment and evaluation, is that the upbuilding regenerative forces of the body. Once you are so weak, you have all these diseases, well, you would need new organ, you would need a new whatever it is. So, but they don't have these rebuilding forces anymore. And this has a lot to do with well, again, the intestines, but also what trace element, minerals, amino acids, good stuff which would help to rebuild new cells, what do you have in your body? So we have, due to wrong nutrition, depleted nutrition. We eat too much, but we eat horrible things. So you lose the capacity to build new cells and regenerate. So we have to build up the regenerative forces. That's the three pillars.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
Ja, stor takk til Dr. Thomas Rau, og for at han fremdeles har mot og krefter til å gjøre denne viktige jobben, også med å utdanne og kurse leger og helsepersonell på sin klinikk, Biomed Sonnenberg, som den heter. Den ligger en times kjøring utenfor Zürich i Schweiz. Det er bare å google Biomed Sonnenberg hvis dere vil vite mer om klinikken. I episode nummer 17 av Paradigmepodden hadde vi besøk av professor Thomas Seyfried fra et av prestisjeuniversitetene i Boston i USA, som nå også samarbeider med Dr. Rau og i mange år har frontet den vitenskapelige forskningen på denne nye forståelsen av kreft. Allerede i 2012 skrev han boken Cancer as a Metabolic Disease, og har senere publisert en mengde vitenskapelige artikler som utfordrer det etablerte kreftregimet. Han var også på Nordisk ernæringskonferanse her i 2023, Og som Rau mener han at de aller fleste krefttyper egentlig har samme bakenforliggende årsaksmønster og derfor I prinsippet å betrakte som samme sykdom. Og han legger ikke skjul på hva han mener om dagens tradisjonelle kreftbehandling.
It's one of the great tragedies in the history of medicine. And sometimes you have to take a little levity and you have to realize how incredibly disconnected we are from knowing how to do things when the solution is staring you in the face and you choose not to use it. That's tragic. That's tragic. So what we've done with the cancer industry is we think breast cancer is different from colon cancer, is different from brain cancer, bladder cancer, uterine cancer, and all these different cancers. So all have their own little, bring them all together. Bring the tribes together. This is one singular disease affecting all these people worldwide, and nobody's doing anything about it. So there has to be some public outrage. It's never going to come from the hospitals. It's not going to come from the pharmaceutical companies. It's got to come from the people, just like Dr. Rao was saying. The people must be educated to know that there is a viable, scientifically established alternative to this crazy stuff that they're doing at the top medical schools. And once the patients, once the people realize that, you're going to start seeing things happen because nobody wants to go through this kind of crazy stuff. And that's why I do this, because I know that's the way to get it through, through the people, not from the establishment. And they already know some of these diagnostic breast mammograms, they can put people at risk for further spread. Biopsies and all this kind of crazy stuff that they're doing is, why are you doing a biopsy? Oh, I have to know if you have stage one or stage two or stage three. Well, if you had stage three, well, you would never want to stick it. And if you have stage one, you stick it, it could become a stage two or three. Why are you doing that? Well, we do it because we were trained to do it. Would you ever think about, oh, I didn't know about that. You read the damn literature, for Christ's sake. These people don't read the scientific literature to show what they're doing can put these people at risk. I can't tell you how many oncologists. I did a big interview with Peter Attia. He said, Tom, you shouldn't be saying things like this. It's not science. What do you mean, Peter? I said, for Christ's sake, do you read the literature? Well, I didn't see those articles. Well, I'll share them with you. I have a whole slug of them published in the top medical journals, biopsy spread cancer. So what are you doing that for? You know, this is nuts. In so many levels, it's complete nuts. And it's not getting better. It's getting worse. So it'd be one thing to say, Siegfried, you know, cancer's already, we're doing really well. You know, I think, you know, let's stay the course. Are you kidding me? It's taken over. It's replacing heart disease as the number one killer of people on the planet. Millions and millions of people are dying from cancer. And it doesn't have to happen. What else can you say?
Ja, hva mer kan man si? Jeg skjønner veldig godt at professoren frustrert når han opplever en mur av motstand mot denne nye forståelsen. En forståelse som også godt vitenskapelig dokumentert, og som man mener kan hjelpe millioner av mennesker. Dessuten kan det spare helsebudsjettene verden rundt for enorme summer I kreftbehandling. For det virkelig paradoksalt at systemet skriker etter stadig mer penger til dyre behandlingsformer uten å investere I forebygging eller rimeligere biologiske og metabolske terapier. Man må bare spørre hvorfor. Situasjonen virker jo temmelig fastlåst når store krefter både innen legemiddelindustri og I behandlingssystemet så opptatt av å beskytte sine egne posisjoner. Men, som Siegfried sier, opprøret må komme nedenifra. La oss til slutt lytte til en annen krefterfarer, mangeårig skolehelsesykepleier Ragne Kaupang Stendal, som etter å ha vært igjennom lang sykehusbehandling av livmorhalskreft med spredning til ryggen, og til slutt ble oppgitt av onkologene med beskjed om 3 måneder igjen å leve. Det nå noen år siden, for hun nylig skrevet boken «Seier, min stemme I kampen mot kreft» om tro, håp og helsevesenet. Ragne ble til slutt friskmeldt etter å ha fulgt teoriene til blant annet Dr. Rao og Dr. Siegfried, godt hjulpet av norske biopater.
Ja, etter behandlingen var ferdig, så ble jeg skrevet ut med at det var ikke noe mer håp for meg, og jeg måtte ta kontakt med palliativ team, og fikk beskjed om at jeg måtte reise hjem og fortelle mine 2 jenter at de kom til å miste moren sin om kort tid. Så jeg ble jo egentlig tatt fra alt håp. Jeg satt jo på alene med legen på et veldig lite kontor der på Radiumhospitalet, og Og de harde faktaene fikk jeg liksom rett i fleisen, at det var ikke noe mer. Jeg var kommet til veis ende. Og jeg husker jeg spurte i hvert fall den legen om det var på samtalen eller dagen før, om er det ingenting jeg kan gjøre da? Er det ingenting? Og jeg visste det her at jeg ville ta tak i det med diett og endre mat. Og så sier hun bare sånn rett ut at nei, det er ingen diett. Så jeg kjente liksom at det alvoret bare kom velvende inn med så stor styrke. Og jeg kjente at liksom, det var ingenting. Altså, det kjentes som det egentlig like godt kunne skutt meg. Og hadde jeg en eller annen liten glo, så kjentes det ut som at den skulle bli trampet på før jeg forlot sykehuset. Hva skal jeg si, helsevesenet i lovens navn tok fra meg håpet mitt. Og det kjenner jeg, det er sånn at jeg kjenner at det har man ikke lov til for mennesker, å ta fra mennesket selve livshåpet. Og det er jo et kjempestort sjokk. Men i all den tid så levde jeg jo fortsatt. Og hva var det jeg liksom skulle gjøre? Og jeg trengte rett og slett tid på å finne meg selv tilbake, finne stemmen min og hvordan jeg skulle fortsette livet mitt. Og det tok meg ut på en sånn lang vei med, jeg kjente jeg trengte veldig sånn fri i huet og fri fra leger og helsevesenet, og finne tilbake til en livskraft da. Så det gjorde at jeg var veldig mye alene. Jeg måtte gå turer i skauen. Jeg var veldig opptatt av hva jeg egentlig fylte meg med, fylte tankene mine med, av liv da. Og så visste jeg jo det fra den tiden jeg var innlagt på sykehus, at jeg egentlig ville legge om kostholdet mitt, men jeg var så dårlig at jeg orket det ikke. Men så fort jeg ble skrevet ut, så begynte jeg å legge om kostholdet mitt, kutte ut sukker, spise på en måte bare grønnsaker og frukt og de tingene der. Og senere så fant jeg jo heldigvis en naturmedisiner som jeg var så heldig å få komme til, som hjalp meg med å stable liksom en videre plan på beina. Fordi man føler seg veldig alene med hvilke råd man skal søke. For jeg visste at legene kan jeg ikke snakke med om dette her, for de tror ikke på det likevel. Så det var veldig god hjelp for meg å finne en i det alternative systemet som kunne hjelpe meg å rydde i alt hva jeg skulle gjøre og ikke gjøre. Så jeg valgte å tro på det og gå for det. Det var altså, jeg begynte ikke med noe faste, fordi jeg var alt for svak til det. Men det var en rensekur, at man måtte på en måte avgifte kroppen, nyrer og lever, og få renset ut, og det var basert på å bygge opp kroppens eget immunforsvar, sånn at kroppen selv skulle håndtere kreften og det som var i ubalanse. Og det har vært en veldig sånn fin ting for meg å holde fast ved, at kroppen egentlig vil helbrede seg selv når forholdene blir rakt til rette for det. Så det handler jo om å spille på lag med kroppen. Og det var jo kjempetøff kur, men jeg var så motivert, og det var utrolig viktig for meg å ha noe konkret å holde på med. Som jeg spiste kålrot i morgen, middag og kveld, så var det noe konkret å holde fast ved, og jeg ble jo skrevet ut med masse urter, vitaminer, mineraler. På det meste gikk jeg jo på 40 forskjellige ting om dagen. Det krevde disiplin og at jeg fortsatte å orke å tro på det. Men det var motiverende når jeg fikk synlig bevis, gradvis synlig bevis. Og det var jo ikke det at legene liksom begynte å si at ja, nå går det bra. Men for meg var jo det objektive svar når svulster som hadde vært 8 centimeter på det største blir halvert, blir 1,5 centimeter og helt til slutt bli borte uten hverken stråling eller cellegift. Det med at jeg har gått hos naturmedisiner, og når han forteller det at vet du hva, du har en sunnere kropp du nå enn en mann I gata, liksom. Du har gjort så utrolig grundig jobb at du på en måte friskere, at du har fått tatt tak I det bakenforliggende som var med å bidra til at du gjorde deg syk. I dag sitter jeg her og som legene kaller det, kreftfri. De finner ikke lenger noe tegn til kreft I hele kroppen min. De beskriver meg som one in a million og helt unik, som de sier. Og noen av de drister seg til å si at jeg et nærmest et mirakel.
Ja, stor takk til Ragne for hennes modige vitnesbyrd, som også å finne I filmen min «Fri fra kreft». Jeg kan bekrefte at Ragne I dag fremdeles frisk og altså lever I beste velgående. Boken hennes kan fås ved henvendelse til Elefantus forlag på nettsiden elefantus.no. Og selvfølgelig stor takk til Dr. Rau og professor Seyfried for deres banebrytende arbeid innen denne nye forståelsen av vår største folkesykdom. Men vi skal også minne om at vi mennesker også har et sinn og en sjel, som selvfølgelig også spiller viktige roller I hele dette sykdomsbildet, noe vi har vært innom I flere episoder og skal utforske videre I kommende episoder av Paradigmepodden. Ja, jeg vil til slutt bare minne om vårt VIPS-nummer som 524005, 524005 for de som vil støtte oss videre, og igjen tusen takk til alle dere som har gjort det. Da vil jeg bare avslutte med å ønske velkommen igjen til neste episode av Paradigmepodden.